Every summer, it's me and the brisket. That's right, me and the brisket and the Weber. And as we get into the days where grilling is not an option, the idea that the brisket can't be on our table certainly doesn't go away. Brisket is a mainstay of cooking and cuisines around the world, and there's a new book about it. It's called The Brisket Book, A Love Story with Recipes. And at times when we're concerned about sort of costs of food, et cetera, and also ways of making imaginative our holiday table, we thought we'd invite Stephanie Pearson in, who's the author of The Brisket Book, A Love Story with Recipes. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
When you say brisket, it's just a sense of affection and love. Why?
Brisket has to do with love. Everyone loves brisket. There's a million reasons why. It is the most wonderfully tender meat, and it conjures up all sorts of memories about families and communities and cultures across the world.
And the brisket is associated with barbecue, as I mentioned, and also Jewish cooking. Give me a sense of the spectrum of cuisines that brisket appears prominently in.
Well, there's three types of brisket. As you said, there's braised and there's barbecue. There's also corned beef, which is a brined brisket. And it really is pretty much across the world, from Asia and Asian stews to obviously Eastern Europe to Ashkenazi Jewish, traditional Jewish cooking to obviously for barbecue. Also, Texas owns brisket. They think they own brisket, and all through the barbecue belt down south. So really all over.
Is brisket cheap these days?
Brisket isn't as cheap as it used to be. There are a number of reasons. Even just last Friday, Walmart announced they were buying more choice beef. So when I spoke to a couple of butchers over the weekend, they said that's going to drive up the price of meat for all the other butchers and supermarkets. And it also varies a great deal whether you're getting a corn-fed piece of brisket at your local supermarket or whether you're getting grass-fed at some place that maybe is an artisanal butcher.
But just a sense of the range of prices. You can go from $2.39 a pound at your Costco meat rack to $13 a pound at one of these
Upper East Side, right. Like
Lobel's. On the...
That's exactly right. So it's quite a range.
But you can make a meal out of that huge slab of brisket that will last you for an entire week if you count the leftovers, right?
Yes. First of all, make a lot is my dictum. And then the second is make more. Brisket's wonderful as leftovers. It's wonderful. Braised brisket is wonderful frozen. And also the ingredients that tend to go into briskets, especially braised briskets, are very inexpensive. You know, just get a lot of onions, basically.
And where does the cut of meat come from?
On the steer?
Right.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant in Europe.
Well, I know where it comes from, the meat case. You know.
Oh, no, but it comes...
I'm that smart. You know.
No, you do know that. It comes from the chest of the steer.
And when you see it in the meat case, it looks pretty appetizing. But boy, if you don't cook it right, it's miserable.
Well, it's one tough piece of meat. And, you know, it's gray. It's like the shape of Tennessee. It's homely. It's not a pretty picture, really, compared to like a sexy sirloin.
And what happens over the course of virtually every recipe calls for a very long cooking process, if not a long cooking and marinating process.
Right. Low and slow is the mantra. No matter how you're cooking brisket, that is pretty much all you need to know is low and slow, and make sure it's juicy enough not to dry out no matter what you're doing, and have a lot of patience. But it releases collagen. There's a whole wonderful chemical effect that happens. And I was talking to Kenji Lopez at Serious Eats, who said to me, it's an interesting cut because first it gets tender very quickly, then it gets tough again, and then it tenderizes.
And it's really about a chemical reaction that literally melts this connective tissue that puts the meat together, right?
Right, and turns it into a gelatin and releases flavor also into the meat as it's cooking.
Who do we meet in this book, The Brisket Book, A Love Story with Recipes?
Well, you meet Joe Nathan, who is – you never say Joe Nathan without saying the doyen of Jewish cooking. You meet Nock Waxman, food historian and owner of New York's Kitchen Arts and Letters. But I have cowboy cooks out in Texas, and I have pitmasters, and I have ranchers, Nyman Ranches. And it's such a huge range. Todd Gray, who is one of the few restaurant owners who actually serves a brisket at his restaurant.
And you get not only love in this book from all of those cooks, you get a sense of confidence that, oh, no, I know how to cook brisket.
Well, right? Everyone knows how to cook it, and, well, they certainly do in my book, but everyone, and I'm sure you know this, everyone thinks he or she has the best recipe ever. There's no question about that. There's a lot of pride of ownership with brisket.
What was the most surprising and unusual set of sort of recipe conditions that one of these cooks described as, oh, yes, this is the best way?
Well, I think one of them is Nock Waxman's, which is actually pretty well known. And Nock has one of the most Googled recipes ever. And that's the one that people think might be served at the White House. But Nock.
So I love that. So this is the deal these days with chefs. The most Googled recipe is like, that's the new standard.
I made that up because I Googled so many recipes and it just kept coming up over and over and over. So
that's great, though.
I think it's kind of a place of pride for Nock. But his and other people do this, too. He does what's called interim slicing. So he'll slice his meat halfway through cooking.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then he rearranges all his little slices so they look like little rockets all lined up sideways, which means that every piece gets covered with gravy as it's cooking. And it's like every piece is an end piece.
All right. Every piece is an end piece. That's interesting.
That's right. So it's all good.
And it's about even cooking as well as long cooking. Now, I'm opening here. Is this your version of I have the best recipe?
Oh, I do. I do. My recipe is, I say that brisket says happy, intact family, even if you don't have a happy, intact family. And that's one of the joys of it. My recipe I got when I was in my 20s. I never grew up with brisket. So I was kind of an orphan. And that wasn't great.
A brisket orphan.
I was a brisket orphan. So I got my best friend's recipe, but then she stopped being my best friend. So my recipe is called My Former Best Friend's Ex-Mother-in-Law's Brisket.
That's great. Well, let me taste it here. Oh, man, that's good.
Oh, good.
Wow. That is so tender.
I think brisket for breakfast might be the answer.
I don't know about that. Oh, man, that's terrific.
Oh, good.
And that is better than mine.
Really?
I like to say that I have the best brisket recipe. That is better than mine.
Thank you. No one ever says that. Thank you for saying that.
Why did you say that this is about family? That this cut of meat and this tradition of cooking it is about, for so many people, a sense of family?
Because it goes back generations. People have recipes from the old country, whatever the old country might be. And there's a tremendous sense of memories and family. I have a Mark Strand poem in the book about pot roast, and he refers to it as the meat of memory. It has enormous resonance. It has enormous provenance. You know, for this simple, humble, tough cut of meat, it brings back all sorts of wonderful memories of love and care.
Is it the case that the cuisine's creativity is not determined by what you do with the fresh berries and the fresh sort of tender rib steak, but in fact what you do with the more challenging cuts in the back of the larder and on the sort of tough side of the steer?
I think that's a great way of putting it. And also, I think brisket is the ultimate comfort food, and what better time than now?
What do you eat brisket with?
I eat brisket with mashed potatoes, which is kind of boring. Other people go for noodles, but it's all about starch.
Yeah, I'm a noodles person.
Oh, you are?
It's all about starch, yeah, as you can tell.
No, me too. We can all still be friends. So,
well, have a happy holiday season.
Thank you.
As
you
we
too.
Get into a sort of a brisket cooking and comfort food cooking, which is what the holidays are all
and
about.
And brisket weather. Go for it.
And Stevie Pearson, author of the brisket book, A Love Story with Recipes. Thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Happy brisket, everyone. If you want to try that recipe, go to thetakeaway.org. If you have your own brisket story to share of family and comfort, please give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to our site, thetakeaway.org. Earlier on the show, we heard from Claire Morgana-Gillis, a freelance journalist based in Libya. What is her view of the future of Libya?
You know, it's my concern that groups such as especially young women will not step up in this time to make certain changes that would benefit them and not just all the rebels who were united against Gaddafi.
If you want to catch up on that conversation or join it about anything on the program, you get our podcast, re-listen on demand, share segments with your friends, go to thetakeaway.org. Check out the blog for a glimpse of what we're working on. You can add your view and your contribution and find posts from all of us, contributors and guests. Check it out at thetakeaway.org. Click on blog. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste is out today. She'll be back tomorrow. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.